Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And we've got Jeff Wenninger back on the show, retired LAPD commander and retired as a lieutenant. Now he's in Ohio. We were just talking about him going to SHOT Show along with myself and Brett Bartlett and hopefully some others, you know, coming up next January in Las Vegas. So stay tuned for that. He's also the author of the new book coming out On Thin Ice. And you can get more information about that at jeffwenninger.com or onthinicebook.com. And we got a lot more to talk about, Jeff. So, but it's all good. A shout out to our sponsors, guys. Gauls.com, our title sponsor. ComplyTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And we've been on satellite radio since May the 5th, and it's been going great. Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're reaching 1.5 million people right now on stream. Also, TwoBells.com, they built their new online store at leoroundtable.com. Please check that out. And you can get cool gear like the shirt that I'm wearing. And we don't charge, we don't make any money off of this. You know, I pay the same prices that you guys pay. So check out leoroundtable.com and check out that online store. Also, fishorlandobass.com. It's a bass fishing charter. And they've also got alligator hunting. You're not killing the alligators. You know, they get calls and you can ride with them and they'll go and they'll capture and release. It's pretty cool, but fishorlandobass.com. If you're going to be going to Disney anytime soon in the Orlando area or for anything else, and you want to be able to drop the wife and the kids off at Disney and go have some fun, or maybe take your oldest son with you, or maybe if you've got an adventurous wife, you know, let her do the alligator thing while you're doing the fishing thing or whatever. It's a great gig, great deal. So fishorlandobass.com, bass like the fish. Check that out. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Diedrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? You know, our update article, we got a Colorado deputy. You know, it's really an update. It says Colorado deputy could face massive a fine for sharing information with immigration authorities. But it's really two deputies that got in the grease. We covered previously about a week ago a Colorado deputy that got in the grease. Now we got more information about how he's being sued civilly, and there could be like a $50,000 fine associated with that. And now we find out who the other deputy is, because they did search to see if anyone else was sharing information with the task force, and they found out that they were. So we'll be covering that and seeing how you guys feel about that. We've also got some stories of video components. A burglary suspect armed with a knife is fatally shot by an LAPD officer after breaking into an apartment. And it is the Rampart Division, Jeff. I'm sure you noticed that, but it's the Rampart Division. So I can't wait to hear about that. I'm sure visually they gave the location of this. I'm sure, you know, you recognize, you just visually you're there. You can see, you know where everything's located. I can't wait to get the inside scoop. I got questions about how this thing went down, but we'll cover that. That'll be our first story with a video component. We have a canine stops a suspect who assaulted a Thurston County deputy during a struggle after police chase. And it's amazing how the after the canine comes up and bites the bad guy in the ear while he's fighting, he just relinquishes the fight a little bit. And then we got a 9-year-old child rescued after being held at knife point by his father. But we have a fantastic taser deployment. Even the sound of the deployment of the taser was so cool. I can't wait to cover that. Savannah officers are justified in shooting a suspect who reversed and crashed into officers during a pursuit. And then body cam shows Alberta. It is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. So in Alberta, we have an officer being dragged when trying to stop a driver inside of a stolen vehicle. Apparently, they haven't got the memo on how we do that and try not to get dragged over here in the States. Of course, we still have officers getting dragged, you know, all the time. We covered on the show, of course, but yeah, I'm glad that it wasn't one of our own that it happened to. The officer's fine. You know, he didn't get really any serious injuries, but there's a learning curve there. So Jeff, if you're ready, I'll tell you what, which one do I want to, let's start off with the update on Fox News real quick. FoxNews.com, Colorado deputy could face massive fine for sharing information with immigration authorities. So just as a refresher, we have Attorney General Phil Weiser in Colorado. He actually sued a Colorado officer for allegedly sharing information with federal immigration agents, which violates a new state law. And it says that they can't share, you know, that kind of information. But it says that he could face a hefty fine. So again, when they sued him, they're not going criminal. They're going the civil route, hoping to find this officer. I'm hoping that there's a union or someone taken up for him. And there's no information, though. So we're in Mesa County. So Mesa County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Alexander Zwink, that's Z-W-I-N-C-K, and another deputy who they identified as Deputy Eric Olson, they ended up being disciplined by the Sheriff's Office for allegedly sharing information with federal immigration agents on a drug task force during which a Brazilian college student was arrested for an expired visa, according to the Associated Press. So Mesa County Sheriff Todd Rowell said that Caroline Diaz Goncalves, that she is a nursing student, a 19-year-old nursing student. She ends up being pulled over by Deputy Zwink. And we covered this last week. And it was a traffic stop that happened on June the 5th. She was allegedly driving too close to a semi-truck. And when she was released without, I guess, with a warning, so he just gave her a warning, and he was with her for about 20 minutes. Federal immigration agent stopped her and arrested her shortly afterwards. So we're saying that the deputy communicated with the people that were on the special network that he communicates with the task force on, and gave them information on her and which direction she was headed in. And then they ended up stopping her and detaining her. I think it was for like 2 weeks. Deputy Zwink, it said that he was placed on 3 weeks of unpaid leave, and Deputy Eric Olson, who they identified was doing the same thing, was placed on 2 weeks of unpaid leave. And this is what the sheriff said in a statement. Both were removed from the task force as well. And two supervisors were also disciplined. One was suspended without pay for 2 days. The other received a letter of a written reprimand. A third supervisor received counseling. Goes on to say that based on our findings, and this is from the Mesa County Sheriff's Office, it said that the Mesa County Sheriff's Office should not have had any role in the chain of events leading to this female being detained. And the sheriff said that he regrets that this occurred. I apologize, names the girl. And this is Sheriff Mesa County Sheriff Todd Rowell, said this in a statement on Wednesday. He said that he's pushed for collaboration between state and federal partners to solve crime in the community in the area of drug interdiction. Homeland Security Investigations has been our primary federal law enforcement partner, although discussions had been with HSI supervision in months preceding the incident to ensure that the deputies were not going to be used or they would only be used for, you know, criminal matters, and they would not be used for anything involving immigration enforcement. The administrative review showed that those lines of collaboration were crossed. So he's blaming HSI as well. And now even the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis, signed, they're weighing in on him, saying he signed legislation earlier this year that prevents local law enforcement from sharing immigration information with immigration officials at the federal level. And that's where all this thing got started. So we got two deputies now. They got caught in the grease. I don't know if there's going to be anybody else, Jeff, or not, but we got two guys on the porch without pay and then some supervisors. Your thoughts on this?
Well, my first thought is that whenever you have any misconduct or behavior that violates policy, whatever discipline that you apply, it needs to be commensurate with the actual infraction. And to be honest with you, three-week suspension without pay and a two-week suspension without pay, in my experience in law enforcement, that's rather severe. That being said, that's more than enough to address this. You don't need this outside entity trying to sue these law enforcement officers for, you know, $50,000 fine for their activities. Because really, when you look at this, I have questions. How well were these deputies trained? How well did to what extent did the agency do their due diligence to ensure that their deputies understood the policy? Because they admittingly state that with drug investigations and things, they work cooperatively with the federal government and the federal agencies. So, you know, how much of this could actually be a result of a failure of the organization and the department not properly training? What do we see oftentimes, Chip? We get this e-training where you get an email that you're supposed to read it, and you know what happens. It's not right, but oftentimes what happens is your daily activities become, you know, your priority, and you just click that you read it and you never read it. And so you're proceeding forward without actually reading and understanding what the policy is now requiring from you. And at the end of the day, that to me, yeah, sure, there's a certain amount of culpability. and criticism that can be placed on the deputy if that in fact is what occurred. However, it's the organization's responsibility to ensure that their people are properly being trained. And something like this would require something more than an email, probably a discussion in a classroom, so people clearly understand what the expectation is, and then and only then can you then hold them accountable. But I think this discipline is pretty severe.
No doubt. Yeah, that's without pay, 3 days. Where do you go after that? I mean, you're talking termination, it's supposed to be progressive discipline. You're absolutely right. All right, coming up on our first commercial break, guys, stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor at Gauls.com. And, as police officers, we all know that we can buy our gear from a lot of different places. And especially when you consider online, it's almost endless, right, as far as the choices go. But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens, and I mean dozens, of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. Personally, I love their go bags. I love their boots. They got some great stuff going on. They got deals all the time, like free shipping and stuff. And they have gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. So if you haven't done this yet, go to Gauls.com, hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they will be your new best friends. Again, that is at Gauls.com. Now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And, Compliant Technologies, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminate weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. And don't forget to watch those cool videos. You're not going to miss those. ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. And we've got Jeff Wininger from LAPD. We are a law enforcement talk show, and we tell the news from a law enforcement perspective. We make no apologies for that whatsoever. But it's an interesting twist. And so, people ask me all the time. I had someone ask me on the phone today, your user base, how do you best describe your user base? And as much as I hate YouTube, because they suck, and they really do. Most of the best demographic information I've been able to get is really from YouTube. And so roughly my estimation is that about 50% of our user base is active and retired Leos, law enforcement officers. And the other 50% are civilians that absolutely love us, with the exception of about 1% of those. Those are the haters, the people that hate us, but they just can't. It's like crack cocaine. They just can't get enough. So 1% of that 50%, they're people that just hate us, but they just have to log into the show, listen to us, and type in stuff and debate with me on Rumble and stuff, about things we're talking about and stuff. But it's all good. So I know that we've been talking about a couple of sheriff deputies in Colorado that got jammed up for sharing information, with a drug task force about an illegal, immigrant. And, they got slapped. Actually, they got kind of hammered with a three-week and two-week suspension without pay, respectively. Are you ready to move on to a story with a video component? All right. I got to warn you, it's LAPD Rampart Division. This is where you used to work, so I can't wait to get the inside scoop here. Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have a burglary suspect armed with a knife is fatally shot by LAPD officer after breaking into an apartment.
Attention, Hispanic Black shirt, blue jeans with a pyro stick.
Hey, you're gonna get shot! Drop that, you're gonna get shot! Drop that shit!
Be back, stand by!
Hit him again.
Be back, stand by!
So East Hollywood, California, suspect accused of breaking into an East Hollywood apartment. It's really a, he's at an apartment complex, multi-level, and they have outside balconies with railings, metal railings on them. And he, it also says he's throwing, I have never seen, you know, bad guy throw pieces of lumber at officers from an elevated balcony, but he's throwing pieces of lumber at officers. He ends up being shot and killed during an officer involved shooting. So this all happened on Thursday morning after 4 o'clock in the morning. When officers with the Los Angeles Police Department's Rampart Division, which is what Jeff used to be in charge of, responded to several calls about a burglary at an apartment complex. Now, the callers indicated that the suspect, who they later identified as 27-year-old Victor Manuel Carrillo, that he actually was trying to get into some of the apartments. And he was later spotted near an entrance on the second floor of the complex. And he was on the outside balcony with the railing and everything. And Carrillo, look, there's a lot of body cam video showing this dude launching lumber and ceramic pots and anything he can find, you know, plants and everything just flying, right? And he's doing this always armed with a knife. And the LAPD is doing a decent job of firing less lethal at him, but that's what they're doing. In fact, I know that predominantly it seemed like they were beanbag rounds that were being launched at this guy and he's being hit, but it didn't really change his behavior or activity. Police said that Carrillo took off and broke into an apartment on the second floor through a window. And when the officers made their way into the apartment, he confronted them with a knife and a metal chair. And he was using that as kind of like as a barrier as he's charging the cops, and they opened fire and he was pronounced dead at the scene. It says that an officer was hit by lumber, declined medical treatment. Two community members suffered minor injuries during a struggle when he was trying to enter their apartment. And one of them was treated by the fire department. The other one declined treatment. Going to my show notes, there's a lot of stuff like the first half of this thing up until like the 9-minute mark. You've got body cams and close-ups of this guy just launching this lumber, you know, the lumber planks, you know, the wooden planks that the officers and stuff that are down below and stuff. But really starting about 8:57 is where they have a female calling in 911 about this, and she's whispering because he's breaking into the apartment from the balcony. I'm curious, Jeff. I mean, I really want to hear how this went. It almost sounded, I don't know if the cops were aware that, I don't know how they missed him breaking into the window, because I know when they were up there, they, how did he get in? And the cops said, there's a broken window. We got in through the window. But it seemed like the cops were unaware until this phone call came in that he broke into this woman's apartment from the balcony. And dispatch notifies Rampart units at 9:26. And then we had body cam. It picks up about 9:33 on the video. And when police respond to the apartment, now they're outside the balcony and there is, she's got burglar bars on there on the doorway, but not on the windows. And so they have to get the burglar bar open on the doorway. They finally were able to kick in the front door at 11:11, force entry at 11:20. And there is less lethal starts at 12:17, and then when this guy charges them at 12:21 with the knife and with this metal chair, because I think he's thinking they're still using less lethal, and but at that point they go lethal on him. But we got 2 minutes, Jeff. Love to hear the LAPD take on this one.
Well, you know, I listened to the entire video. Initially, it starts with the communications division recording with the woman in the apartment calling and talking to the communications civilian, and described that the individual is trying to break in. Has tattoos and stuff. So my first thing was, you know, perhaps he's a gang member, and these are gang tattoos that she's seeing. That area, you're right. I worked Rampart Division as a sergeant. I was a field sergeant there, and then I ran the gang unit, the gang enforcement detail unit, for 3 years. So I'm very familiar with that area. Actually, where that is, it's between like Vermont and Normandy, if anybody's familiar with Los Angeles. And it's just south of the 101 Hollywood Freeway. And back in the late 90s, that was what a gang called White Fence. That was their area. But then MS kind of came in and took control of it. So I believe MS is still in control of that area. So my initial thought that this was a gang member. But then, you know, in the response of the officers, they initially made contact with the guy. They verbalized with him initially. Then the guy began to escalate. And they elected to start shooting beanbag rounds. Now, the problem with the beanbag rounds was that they're shooting up from the ground up to a second story level. And there's an issue with that. And I can get into that more after the break, because it's quite involved. But it's something that anybody in law enforcement should be considering in that type of a situation.
All right, excellent. Perfect timing. Guys, commercial break. Stay tuned. The story's going to get really good from LAPD. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, they're back. AeroPrecisionUSA.com. And introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And, you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with something they call the Soulless Bolt Action. And stay tuned, because the M4E1 Pro and the Mod 4 handguards, they hit AeroPrecisionUSA.com last year, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence, and they're now being tailored for the civilian customer, which is a lot of you guys. So, and also their M5 AR 308 platform, great. AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure documents into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up on August the 6th, CIs and search warrants. Sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue. Step up your legal game. That is at BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host for a law enforcement talk show, joined by former LAPD commander of the Rampart Division, I might add, Lieutenant Jeff Wininger. And he's breaking down a story for us right now. We have a bad guy. He's a would-be burglar trying to break into several apartments at an apartment complex. They've got these outside balconies that have wire or have metal railing, and that's where he's at launching. It's a huge balcony as far as the length going, across the building. And he's launching like these 2x4s and ceramic potted plants and just everything he can find at the cops. And he's insulting them with verbiage and stuff. And at some point, there's an apartment up there. He's on her balcony, and he busts through the window, and he goes inside. And it's not until the woman calls dispatch and tells them that the guy broke in that it appears that the cops were not aware until then. And they get up on the balcony, and they see how he got in, and then they make entry. And after a bunch of less lethal, which happened on the outside too, he charges them with a knife and a metal chair, and they go lethal, and they kill him. So and Jeff was. He's very familiar with the area, and he's breaking it down for us. So you've got over 9.5 minutes, Lieutenant Jeff. The floor is yours.
All right. So yeah, like you described, they were, this guy was just launching everything he could put his hands on at the, at these officers, which is an issue. I mean, that's an issue for these officers. And they focused on deploying less lethal to try to control this guy. And I see that there's an issue with that in regards to that they were using the beanbag rounds initially. They're firing from down below up to a second story landing, or it's basically the exterior hallway or whatever you want to call it. But what you have is you have a wrought iron fence along the walkway there where he's standing on the second floor. Now those beanbag rounds, they have number 9 lead pellets in them, where they're about 8/100ths of an inch in size. And the problem that you have is when if you're firing those, and say they hit that wrought iron fence and they break open, you now have these lead projectiles, which is something you need to be considering, because that can make this less lethal, potentially lethal. So that was something that they should have considered. I did see them eventually transition over to the 40, which is like a foam round, which you don't have this potential for it breaking open and having these lead, essentially, they'd be like small shotgun rounds going at the suspect. So that was one thing. The other thing was that they just honed in on where they were at the time. They needed to really think about, what is our ultimate goal and why are we here? We are here because this guy was trying to break into one of these apartments. What were they doing? What was their response doing to prevent him from following through with that? And the reality was nothing, because he ultimately accomplished what they were there to prevent from occurring. And their tactical deployment of personnel resources did not address that. This guy's focus was towards the front of the building where the officers initially were. They had his attention. They needed to get another team of officers deployed. There's sets of stairs on each end of the long hallway that he's in. I don't know. Is there a better word for that? It's not really a hallway. I don't want to call it a hallway, but it's like a motel. Exterior. You step out of your motel room and you're on a, you know, and you can see the parking lot and you're looking down and there's a railing and all that stuff. That's what this looks like, but it's an apartment complex.
I'm sure the people who live there right now appreciate that, Jeff. That description.
Yeah. But so it would have been nice to see a team of officers go up while they have his attention up front and try to address him to prevent him from being able to do what he ultimately did, was get inside. I mean, those people were terrified. If you watch the video, it's a small apartment complex. And after the shooting occurs, these people had barricaded themselves in the bedroom with the mattresses up against the door. And I mean, they were completely terrified. So there was kind of a breakdown in, it kind of just froze in their ingenuity in being innovative and creative and how to address this tactical scenario, and actually determining and establishing, why are we really here and what do we need to be doing to accomplish what needs to be accomplished? They just were basically responding to everything that was launched at them with a less lethal deployment. Right. That's essentially what occurred. So when they go up there, they spent way too much time in front of that door trying to figure out what's going on. Yeah. You don't ever want to do that. Now, you know, they had the lethal, I think they had the less lethal. How they were there as long as they were, having worked Rampart, why didn't they have a ram to get through the door? This guy kicking it open, there's no excuse why they shouldn't have had that tool there. There's a number of units that have those deployed in them. So, and they needed to do that. That was just not a tactical deployment, because you had exterior window, large exterior window, which exposed you to what's inside. You have a guy trying to kick the door open, which I give him credit. He was determined. He got it open, but it took him a little while. And in doing so, he's compromised. Had that guy just opened the door and came out, good Lord, and had it been a mistimed kick, he's opening it at the same time, you're inside that location. He didn't have a gun drawn, and the suspect armed, known to be armed at least minimally with a knife. And I don't know about you, Chip. I'd rather be shot than stabbed. I don't ever want to be stabbed.
Knives are nasty. So, yeah.
Right. So that was an issue. And then when they go inside, there was a very small, you have like a living room area, and it looked like a little pantry area, a place where they may store food or something off the kitchen, where he was kind of secreted behind. And he had like one of those metal chairs that you would see at a church picnic, essentially. Yeah. Fold out. Yeah. And then he had the knife, and he then approaches them, and that's when they go lethal. And there's the one thing that I saw, this guy, there's number of rounds fired, and then the guy goes down, and then there was a number of rounds fired after when he was on the ground. And I thought to myself, it's going to be interesting how this shooting is going to be handled, considering what Tony McBride went through. If you have an issue with Tony McBride shooting, you certainly have an issue with this one.
Right, shots 5 and 6.
I mean, there was a round that seemed like it was 3 minutes late when, you know, the guy was. I mean, it was bad.
May have been a delayed primer ignition on that one. Maybe I'm thinking so.
I don't. I mean, it may have actually. I mean, my thought was it was a negligent discharge, that it wasn't even actually intended, because it seemed to be that late. But it just seemed like an over deployment of lethal. Because in the past I did a study for Chief Charlie Beck when he was concerned with about the number of rounds that were being fired. We had this huge increase in number of rounds and number of officers firing these officer involved shootings. And he's like, is this something we're doing? Were we training this inadvertently? And I did a year long study, and I did a thing with the sheriff's department where we were able to create contagious fire. We could cause officers to fire. Yeah. You create the circumstance where you knew multiple officers are going to fire when there wasn't a lethal force scenario. Now, granted, here was a lethal force scenario, but you had a heck of a lot of guys firing, which always escalates the criticism of the police department. And we never want to put officers in any type of jeopardy, but at the same time, we want to be cognizant of making sure that we're optimally deploying our resources and not over responding to something. So it'll be interesting how this case is adjudicated. You know, I did this for a number of years. I wrote Chief William Bratton and Chief Charlie Beck's rationale for their recommendation for the adjudication of Austin Ball shootings and all lethal force cases. And that was be submitted to the Honorable Board of Police Commissioners, who are the ultimate adjudicators. And you know, there's a number of this will be a fairly lengthy report. is my expectation. So, there's some things that went well, but there's a lot of things. I think there's lessons learned, and in hindsight, given the same circumstances again, we may want to do things a little differently.
All right. Well, good breakdown and good insight. I had a lot of questions. Now you answered, you know, most of those. So yeah, I am so glad that the resident did not end up getting stabbed to death or something, you know, worse happening. There would have been, you know, flags, you know, liability flags were just going off in my head on that one, you know. So, but thanks for telling us how it could have been. There's always something to be learned, even when things go right. There's still stuff we can learn. So it's nice to always have that mindset on, you know, being willing to learn and, you know, evolve, you know, in the profession. Guys, we're coming up on another commercial break. So we got some more good stories with video components. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at gunlearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course said, huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and gun learners have been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is at gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by co-host, and that's right, Lieutenant Jeff Weninger, our former LAPD commander. And look, we've been talking about Rampart and some other stories that we've had. We're ready to move on to another story with a video component. And Jeff, I was going to ask you, we've got roughly almost 9.5 minutes. I see Paul Bogart has been typing on the stream. Good to see you, Paul Bogart. Thanks for watching. And yeah, we've got a lot of other guys like Dr. Sylvester House Jr. just made a lengthy post on here talking about some legislation. So, and Bill Van Rom, we've got a lot of people posting here. But as far as the next story we cover, we got a canine that stops the assault on an officer and or on a deputy. Then we got the 9-year-old child that's being held at knife point by his father. I really wouldn't mind covering that one. We may have time to cover both. Is that okay? All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, let's take them out of order just so we can make sure we cover the child one. So at Rumble.com, again, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have a child that's 9 years old, rescued after being held at knife point by his father of all people. It's just crazy to watch this go down.
Put the knife down so we don't have to hurt you. All right? You understand?
I have time to
put it down or you're going to get tased. Put it down. Now. Put it down. Hands on, hands on, hands on!
Stay back.
Obviously some mental health issues here. So Montgomery County, Maryland, Germantown man is arrested after Montgomery County Police Department says that he threatened to kill his young son and he held him at knife point, and this happened late in July. So it's the officials say that the 5th District officers, they rushed to a home around 10:14 in the morning after a call about a domestic disturbance. The caller reported to police that our bad guy, Dugan Gotkin, 47 years old, he's inside the house and he's threatening to kill his 9-year-old son. Officers get there. They speak with the family members. They try to de-escalate the situation by talking to our bad guy. When the officers enter the home, our bad guy goes into the kitchen. He's got a large knife up to his son. And he's in the kitchen area. There is a wall with an open bar or counter there. So the officers can kind of like see through that and see the bad guy. But they've got, they can partially see him. So he's given multiple commands to drop the knife. He refuses, and he's ultimately forced to drop the knife after a 5th District sergeant who went to the home used his taser. Now, I'm not sure if this is the new Taser 20. I suspect it probably is a multiple fire taser, but it was like it was a double tap. You can hear these probes being fired from the gun, and you can see them hit the target. And it was it sounded really cool. It was a thing of beauty because the guy has got his son, got the knife, and you see the guy, it looks like he starts to go down, and the officer verbalizes, you know, hands on, and you've got other units there to the side that rush into the open area for the kitchen. They get in the kitchen and they end up, I'm not sure the son was, I saw one video where it looked like the guy still had control of the son. I saw another one where look at the son had already gotten away. But in any case, they separate the son from the bad guy, separate the knife from the bad guy, and he goes down and they end up arresting him and no injuries reported. So I absolutely love success stories like this when they go down. Your thoughts on this one, Jeff Weninger?
Yeah, I think the thing that really stuck out to me was how calm these officers were when they walked into this scenario. You can't get a more stressful situation than having an adult who's holding a child hostage with a means of deadly force available to them. This guy had a knife. It was a heck of a knife. And rather than just yelling and screaming, you know, drop the knife or I'm going to kill you. And they had a different tone about them. They behaved and acted as if they'd been in this kind of a scenario before. There was a sense of confidence about how they conducted themselves. And it was very different than what we saw in the Rampart case. I mean, it really was. I hate to say it, but it's true. Yeah. I was really impressed with how they had one person communicating. There wasn't a lot of people just yelling. And it was masterful to the extent where they had the less lethal, the taser, they deployed it. Boom, you could see it worked. I mean, what is it? Tasers work, what, 30% of the time? But this time it did. I mean, this guy just starts falling. He freezes up and he just starts falling over. And an unbelievable level of communication. When you're talking about a tactical scenario, it's all about communication. Communication will determine whether or not something will be successful. And he communicated, as you said, prior in describing this incident, that he's saying hands on, hands on. And they were on that guy straight away, where they were able to separate the child from him and disarm him from the knife and take him into custody without any further incident. It was that right there should be a training scenario from the beginning of the interaction all the way through to the deployment of the taser, the communication, and the teamwork that was involved. I was really impressed, Chip. I really was.
Yeah, I mean, it completely justified in going lethal if he wanted to. I was impressed that he was a sergeant number one. So he was very, very confident in his capabilities, and there's a trust factor there too. So when he's going hands on, these guys have got to trust the sergeant, knowing that this guy is incapacitated. They're charging in thinking that the sergeant's basically telling them, I've incapacitated this guy with a taser. It's working. When they round the corner, and there's a dude with a knife there, they're putting themselves in a pretty bad situation, right? And they're trusting that sergeant going on his word, and they're running right up on the bad guy. So yeah, it was a thing of beauty. It was really quite impressive. Yeah.
It really was. And in this case, they were fortunate enough to have a sergeant. That just that sergeant's presence may give the confidence of the officers in the direction. But really the reality is somebody, whether there's a sergeant there or not, needs to step up and take command and control of the situation and be the one that's going to give the direction on how things are going to occur. So whether it's a sergeant or if it's an officer that steps up and takes that role, it's important that it occurs, because this is an example of how things can go well. This is one circumstance where I would say the outcome was an optimal outcome. This was as good of an outcome as you could expect.
And we got it all on video.
So I can't say enough about that incident and how they handled it. It was outstanding.
Yeah. Well, good. So yeah, I agree with you for a training video. And the nice thing is, I suspect that this sergeant, the troops that work for him, have a huge benefit of working for a guy like this that's showing you how to get it done. And he's a hands-on sergeant. You know, there's a lot of, well, I'm preaching to the choir, but you know, and I retired as I was really a corporal. I have detective on my badge. That was where, you know, I wanted to be known as a detective when I left, but really the troops, working for a guy like that, he's a training sergeant. He's a hands-on sergeant. So you're going to learn more from working for a guy like this than somebody else. And I tell you, it just brought so many great memories of some of the great trainers that I've had in the past, because not all sergeants are like that. You know that. And some guys get promoted above their ability too. It's just going to happen. You know, they don't have training classes on telling you how to become good leaders and good sergeants and loot. And as you go up the chain, you would think you have even being a lowly detective, they don't really have great training that teach you how to have investigative skills and how to do this and do latent investigation. You just have to wing it until you learn it. You know, it's just.
And it's clearly evident that we all know in law enforcement that there's never enough dollars to give officers the amount of training that they actually need. And to see something occur in this type of a stressful situation where it's rapidly unfolding, it's highly stressful, and to have them perform at this level, that tells me that this sergeant goes above and beyond. It's not about the formal training that the department's paying these officers to go to. It's the the enrichment training that's done in roll call or out in the parking lot or over a cup of coffee, yeah. the discussions that they have that make it possible for this type of outcome to occur. And it's, you know, you hit it on the head when you're talking about it. It's about leadership, and it doesn't have to be a sergeant. It can be a senior officer. It can be a junior officer who has outstanding background in the military that can bring that level of expertise and command and control to a situation. But at the end of the day, it should be somebody. And this is just something that that oftentimes we don't see enough of in law enforcement. Taking it to the commitment to train on your own time.
Agreed. Well, great breakdown. Thank you so much, Lieutenant Jeff Wenninger, for being on the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org, Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt. You know, watch the clock, Jeff. Take me to about 20 minutes before the hour. And so you've got about, you know, 30 some seconds. But let's talk about your book coming out and give the latest update for our listeners and viewers.
Well, the book will be coming out. I'm going to be making the announcement here. Look out for the date that I'll be making the announcement. On that date, I will be giving away free VIP books to a number of winners. But the book, it's called On Thin Ice, and you can find it at onthinicebook.com.
Love it. Love it. On Thin Ice, guys. Stay tuned for that. And hey, a shout out again to our sponsors. Please support our sponsors, guys. Our title sponsor, Gauls.com, also ComplianTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, and Medicare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells. Also, FishOrlandoBass.com. And thanks for watching the show. We'll look for you guys back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern.